Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode and new season of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am your host, Katya Allison. So, what have you gotten yourself into? Together, we are decoding marketing to make it accessible for everyone. Cut through the BS and get down to the nitty-gritty. In each episode, you are going to walk away with a nugget or an insight that you can bring into your professional and, dare I say, sometimes even personal life. So stick around and take a listen to all of the knowledge bombs that are being dropped in absolutely every episode. And today, I have the privilege to be joined by an incredible guest, Steve Miller. Now, Steve is a branding and marketing expert who's known as the uncopyable marketing gunslinger. That's right. That's what I said. Gunslinger. With over 30 years of experience, Steve has worked with some of the world's top companies and organizations, helping them really just kind of differentiate their brands in ways that truly resonate with their audiences. We dive into concepts like brand differentiation, why being better than your competition isn't enough, and how truly standing out requires something different. Steve shares insights on how brands can find their unique voice and stop copying the competition. We'll also get to explore benchmarking and the power of being different in ways that really matter to you. Steve, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am so excited to have you on here because today we're going to be talking about just building your personal brand, but I'm going to see how we also tie it to just brand in general. So welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Katya. All right.
All right. Let's get going.
Yet? I know you were talking about grading me.
So I know. No.
I want to see how soon I can ask for my grade.
Too soon to grade.
Let's
go through the first section first, which is where the audience gets to know you a little bit. What is your current role? What do you currently do?
What do I do? All right. Well, overall, I am a marketing and branding specialist. And I have been doing that for many years now. I am known as Kelly's dad and uncopyable marketing gunslinger.
Nice.
So when you ask, like, what do I do? I mean, that's what I tell people I do. Right? It's I'm Kelly's dad, and then I do this. So the first part is who I am. I'm Kelly's dad. I wanted to tell people a little bit about me. And then what I do is the uncopyable marketing gunslinger stuff, which basically tells you I'm here to help a business, help people, individuals, companies, separate themselves from the crowd, and be different.
Yeah.
There's a very, very important reason for that. And then they pay me to help them do that. And then they want me to go away.
Well, you got to teach them how to fish, right? That's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah.
I'm the guy that kind of, you know, like you, exactly. That's a perfect example. I teach people how to fish. I teach them ways to do this stuff that they've really never thought of before. And it's crazy wild because, you know, it's gotten me, done it around the world and spoken around the world. And now I'm here, you know, with the infamous Katya.
I love that. Now, I feel like you alluded a little bit already to this, but I'd like to know, what is it that you love about what you currently do? But with the good comes the bad. So keep in mind, I'm also going to ask you what you don't love about what you do. So
okay.
Let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
What I love about what I do is, and I'll just tell you a very, very quick story. Many years ago when I started all this stuff, now, you know, I have spoken around the world. I've given over 1,600 paid presentations around the world to show you. That does not include all the consulting that I've done around the world. I have over 6 million frequent flyer miles under my belt, which is probably more than anybody you've ever talked to before. And so I've been around, and I've done a lot. And I know all the top speakers in the world. And you know, and you often, and a little hidden secret is that there is a very high percentage of these people, very famous people, they live for the applause. Mm-hmm. And I have never lived for the applause. I still remember the day that it really came home to me. And this was many years ago. I was speaking for the National Cattlemen's Association in Denver, Colorado. And I got done giving a keynote speech at the conference. And a guy came up to me and he said, Mr. Miller, I had to say hello to you. He said, because, you know, you spoke here last year. And then they brought me back. And he said, you saved my business. With the information that you gave us in last year's speech, and I had to come in and tell you that you saved my business, you've taken care of my family, you've taken care of my employees, all of that stuff. And the moment he said that to me, I knew that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. I'm here for anybody whose life I can improve. That's what I'm here for. Every single day, I want to help one person's life get better, and there's nothing better than that. The money, the travel, you know, the being well known in certain areas, you know, it's just not that, it's not important to me.
It's helping people. Well, let's talk about the opposite. What don't you like about it?
Travel. Yeah, and it's true. Anybody who likes to travel is a very sick person. And once you get past that kind of million mile part, you know, it's just a grind. It's just a grind, and you have to get yourself motivated for why you're doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that I would know, okay, whether I was in a board of directors meeting or if I'm at a conference speaking, or something, it's for the moment that I'm there for. Okay. And everything else around it completely sucks. And I don't mean completely sucks in a way, because, you know, I meet a lot of nice people and everything, yeah. Everything's really, really great, but the travel part is just so awful. It's just so awful.
I obviously do not travel as much as or as far as or have accumulated as many miles as you have, but I can definitely see the wear and tear of it. There is something exhausting about having the airplane be your form of commuting from, you know, point A to point B, and then you've got time zones in between that, and like, oh yeah, you have to pack, and what time is it back home so that you can call home? So there's so many moving parts of it, and it does affect like your work-life balance, right?
Well, and things happen in your life. I mean, I can tell you that one time I checked into a hotel in New York City at like 11 o'clock at night or something like that, and they said, and this is pre-cell phones and stuff, and they go, oh, there's a message, your wife would like you to call her. And so I called her up and I thought, oh boy, something's wrong or anything like that. And I said, what's up, what you need? And she said, I just want to let you know I bought our new house. And the house that we live in right now is the house she bought.
Is the house? Excellent. Yeah. Well, obviously, and she made a good choice.
Yeah. You know, and our daughter, and I never missed anything important for our daughter. That was one thing. Yeah. Remember, I said, Kelly's dad. That's the important part, right? And so I made sure I didn't miss anything important with her. And we had a fabulous, fabulous time. But at the same time, she was in grade school, and the teacher was asking the kids about their parents and stuff like that. And she said, and the teacher asked Kelly, she says, what does your dad do? And she says, he gets on airplanes.
Isn't it so interesting to see how they view what it is that you do?
Right.
I love
totally,
that.
Totally crazy.
I feel like what you love is very altruistic. You want to be able to make the difference, and the travel makes the most sense. Now, because we are talking about building a brand, and you kind of already alluded to one of the things of like back when there wasn't a cell phone or, you know, things like that. So you have to be able to keep up with the trends in order to really be and effectively help people nowadays. So I'm wondering, how do you stay up to date with the trends? Is there a podcast? Is it just talking, networking, traveling? How are you keeping up to date?
Well, how do I stay up to date? I'm a very natural learner, lifelong learner. Okay. I grew up kind of as a nerd. Even though I was an athlete, I was a jock. To throw some of the big stories at you about me, my friends consider me to be like Forrest Gump. I sort of have this odd mixture of a background, and it started with my dad. My dad was the co-inventor of the 8-track tape player.
Get out of here.
No, if you want me to, I will, but...
No, we haven't even gotten to the branding part.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, and growing up with him, my dad was basically a consumer, was an electronics inventor. That's what he was known for, and he would get hired. He was like a guy who's in the military, but instead of being in the military, he just went from company to company. They would hire him to create new consumer electronics.
Interesting.
And so we moved around. I went to like 13 different schools growing up, and then part of it was when he was hired by a gentleman, a rich guy who had an idea. He said, "Hey, I think we should come up with something that where you can carry your music with you." Right? My dad said, "Yeah, let's do that." Right? 8-track. And so then the 8-track, they came up with the 8-track, so I was around that new stuff like that a lot. And it just kind of stuck with me. When I went to school, again, showing off how old I am, I went to Purdue University, known for its engineering and stuff like that. Well, the year I entered Purdue was the first year that they offered a computer science class. That was the first year. And they built a new building there for the computer sciences. The building was like 3 or 4 stories tall. The computer was most of the building. The computer itself was like 2 or 3 stories.
Yeah.
Of the computer back then. So I was also involved in that, in learning computer language, computer programming and stuff like that back then. And it's just stuck with me. I mean, I've been leading edge. I had my first website in 1994.
Really?
And I dragged an entire industry. I was very big in consulting for the trade show industry, and so the largest trade shows in the United States and several from overseas were clients of mine. I dragged them kicking and screaming into the internet world. They were the first companies to have that stuff, it's the same thing now. I am very big on AI, and I've been taking my clients, dragging them kicking and screaming into the AI world, teaching them how to use that.
Oh my gosh, we can have a whole podcast on the AI.
Yeah,
stuff.
I know you've had several podcasts on AI, and those and from what I could see, those have been among your most popular.
Mm-hmm. They are. I think that everybody's really craving to learn it and try to understand it. And I think most people are just kind of scared about it. So I love the fact that you have what to me sounds like, and I know you're going to keep saying about your age, but to have a growth mindset at your age too, and continuing to like feed it and be surrounded by it and have that natural curiosity is very unique, because I think sometimes we in general lack curiosity of like, well, let me try and figure it out, right? Like, you don't have to figure out how every little widget works, but if you're just a little bit more curious,
10%.
Yeah, just a little bit. You don't even
have to. If you are 10% more interested,
yeah,
in what's happening, and you take it with that type of an attitude,
yeah,
where you look at something that's coming out that's new, and you know, and instead of saying, "Oh man, are you kidding me? Do we have to embrace it?"
Yeah,
embrace it, and also don't feel like you have to go out and learn everything. See, when I teach my clients about AI, I'm showing them the real rudimentary simple stuff, yeah. But it's, you know, to the rest of the world, it's off the charts, unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, when you're doing stuff like that. And so I help my clients kind of take the little baby steps with them. And yeah, like I did back with the internet, it, you know, when I brought the internet to them, they could not. They're like, get out of here. This is not going to be any big deal. And I said, are you kidding me? I said, this thing might put you out of business.
Yeah. And it did put businesses out of business.
Oh, well, and AI is putting businesses out of business. So you see, technology does that.
Yeah.
You know? And it's no different, you know, than, you know, the old gas lamps, the whale blubber, you know, street lamps.
Yeah.
Okay. Technology moves you forward, and yeah, somebody's going to lose their job. Yeah. Somebody's going to lose their job to AI, but they're just losing a job.
Yep.
That's the thing that people have to remember. They're not losing their life. They're not losing what could be a career. They're just losing a job.
Yeah.
And if your job, and this is no different than in marketing with companies, that when companies come up with a new idea for a product, or they take a product and they think their product is better, they create a better product than the competition. Well, the first thing to remember is that better is not better. Better is very, very short term.
Okay.
Better is very short term. Because better is almost all the time copyable.
Okay, unpack that a little bit for me. Better is copyable.
Yes. Think about if somebody takes a, you know, they take a car, look at the cars. You know, the cars over the years. Many years ago, there were cars who were known for quality.
Mm-hmm.
There were cars that were known for being crap, but they were cheaper, and so you bought them. Right? Mm-hmm. If you didn't have any money, you paid for the cheaper cars, and you knew you were getting crap. You knew it. All right. There are no crap cars out there anymore. And the reason why is because when the cars got a little bit better, the crap cars followed.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? And the crap cars got a little bit better. And they got a little bit better. They got a little bit better. So now all the cars are good.
Yeah, they're decent, right?
Yeah. There are no bad quality cars. You know, anymore. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk now about, you know, some of the Tesla trucks or something like that. That's just a joke. That's a joke for everybody, you know?
To kind of follow up on what you were talking about. And like I said, it's a good segue into building your personal brand and your brand in general.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about cars and how better is not better. Right? Better is copyable. And you had brought the example of the cars, which I love, because I think when we think of like what a good car is, and now we think about like the Kias and the Hyundais right now, how they're really leveling themselves up and people are really starting to purchase more of those.
Well, but so, what is it? But all right, so let me ask you, okay, what are they doing to level themselves up?
From a visual perspective?
No, from a purchasing perspective. Why is, what are they doing that is causing people that you say, and people are responding by buying more, right? Okay, what are they doing?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that I think it's just a visual thing. I think that they're changing their logos. That's what I think that they're doing. So their logos are being updated. You can't tell. Have you seen like the Kia logo?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite look like the old Kia logo.
But do you think that translates to more sales?
I think it translates into something psychological that feeds into more sales. Now, I'm not saying that that makes the most sense, but like from a visual perspective, I don't know what they've actually done inside of the cars to make them any better, except for, to your point, kind of just keeping up. Like if there is a screen on the dashboard in the nicer cars, or nicer, quote unquote, then there should be a big screen in the middle.
Screens are bigger. It's a bigger screen. That's what we got there, a bigger screen or, you know, I don't know, but that's kind of what that's what I'm talking about when I say let me just put it to you this way, because if we're talking about branding, what is branding in reality? Branding isn't a logo.
Mm-hmm.
Branding is what we are promising to the marketplace. Mm-hmm. We are promising them something, okay? Now, what happens is that every time somebody interacts with our company, with our logo, or anything, a TV commercial or anything, right? Every time somebody interacts with that, one of three things happens. Number one is that it maintains their perception of the brand.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's the first one. The second thing is that it enhances their perception of the brand. Okay. And the third thing is it diminishes their perception of the brand. Every single interaction that we have with our marketplace, with our targets, that's what happens. That's what's going on. And so what we're doing, what we do as companies and as individuals, we are making a promise
mm-hmm.
out there as to who we are, what we stand for, why we exist, what we're going to promise, we're going to deliver to you, right? And then you decide whether we have lived up to that or not. And if we live up to it, then you go, hey, thumbs up, good for you. If we enhance it, you go, oh, wow. Oh, maybe I better think about that, right? If we diminish it, we go, I'm not interested in that. I'm not going to give them my money. Right. And this is true of companies. This is true of individuals. So when we talk about personal branding, one of the biggest issues with personal branding is that we don't get the fact that we have to be different.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get it. In fact, a lot of companies don't get it, but especially in personal branding situations, we tend to fall in with the crowd. We live in the box. Everybody talks about it. We live in the box. Now, see, here's one of the issues with the box is that you often hear, oh, you got to get out of the box. You got to get out of the box. Well, okay. All right. What does that mean? First of all, what is the box?
Yeah.
And I mean, how do I know I'm in it? Okay. And I'm going to tell you exactly right now what the box is. And I'm going to tell you why it's important to get out. And I'm going to tell you why it's more important to do something else. But number one, what's the box? The box is your, the box is the world that you live in. So like, let's say, for example, we're a car, we're talking about cars. All right. Imagine that you work for a car, you work for one of the big car companies. You're an engineer or whatever it is you do, or you're a purchasing person, or you're a salesperson. It doesn't matter. You work for that. You work in that industry. So that industry has a box. It's the car industry, right? And inside that box are all the, you look down inside there and you see all of the manufacturing companies, all the suppliers are inside that box. All of the potential customers are inside that box. All of the trade shows are in that box. All of the magazines or publications that people read, they're all the conferences are in that box because that's their world. It's only natural, it's been that way forever. Okay, we all live in our world, right? So now let's imagine, and you know what else is going on in that world? It's supposedly competition. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're sitting there, you know, and let's say you manufacture, I don't know, brake pads for a car. Okay, well, there's a lot of companies that make brake pads.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm in there, and who am I looking at? If I'm making brake pads, who else am I looking at in that box?
All the other people that make brake pads.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I'm looking at them, and I'm looking at them, and I'm saying, okay, what do I have to do to separate myself from them? How do I make myself where companies want to buy my brake pads?
Mm-hmm.
And so they come up with the, and they go, oh, well, I don't know. What are all the other guys doing?
Yeah.
Right? That's what we do. And so then we go in and we say, oh, wait, you know what? I just noticed something. That company over there in the corner, company ABC, they just made their brake pads 5% bigger. Oh, you know what we need to do? We need to make ours 10% bigger. See, it's they're eminently copyable.
Yes.
They're easy to copy, and it's easy to be better.
Okay. Right?
Easy to get better, okay? But better is never the answer. The answer is different because people do not buy from you. And I'm talking to everybody out there. People do not buy from you, and people do not buy you because you are similar to the competition. They buy from you because you're different from the competition, but you're different in important ways. You're different in unique, valuable ways that are important to them. That's what separates you from the crowd. Now, when we talk about the box, okay, so you're the brake pads, you're in the box. You're in the brake pad box, which actually is a box. It's inside of the car industry box, right? And when people say, you got to get out of the box, well, okay, they say you get it. So you start to climb out of the box. Well, what's outside the box? Nothing. There's nothing outside the box. In reality, what it is that if you look around, there's just all these other boxes out there.
Mm-hmm.
They're the other industries. They're the other boxes that are there. There's, you know, there's cookware over here in this box. There's food in this box. There's IT in this box. There's, you know, medical in this box. And those are all the other boxes. Okay.
Yeah.
So now if all we do is hang out in our box and we try to beat the competition, we end up doing one of two things. We just end up trying to be a little bit better. It's just a little bit better. And it's always temporary.
Mm-hmm.
It's always temporary because the other guys are going to watch you. If you do something a little bit better, the other guys are going to see and they're going to do the same thing. Okay. So they're going to do a little bit better. Or ultimately, as we all know, all things being equal, what's the decision? What is the decision based on?
Decision is based on your audience that you want to reach, right?
Oh, you've got you. No, but your audience is now looking at what you've got. All right. And they see that you are the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
oh, wait, no, you've got to lit something a little bit better. But if it's not important, mm-hmm. if it's not unique, if it's not different or something like that, and it looks like and everything looks the same, what is the decision-making factor?
The decision-making factor is, do I like them or do I not like them? Honestly, it becomes personal.
The decision-making factor is price.
You think it's just price?
When you are at that point.
Yes, you're right.
You are at that point where all things are equal. Unless you have some kind of personal attachment to a company.
And I think that's where I was getting at when I think it's personal, right? Unless I have a personal attachment, unless I have, it's because I do it in my personal life. I see this and I have seen it in business time and time again. If I have brand loyalty,
that's
actually
right.
Price doesn't matter as much.
Not if you have brand loyalty. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
See, if you, but you see, but the vast majority of decisions that we make are not based on brand loyalty because they don't give us a reason to have brand loyalty.
So how do you build brand loyalty?
Well, number one is you got to recognize you have to be different. You cannot beat the competition by being better than the competition, because that's just a vicious circle going around. You get better, they get better. You get better, they get better.
Then what's your advice on being different? Like, how do you be different? Because I know that I'm someone that could listen to this and be like, okay, I hear what you're saying, Steve. I've got to be different. But what does that mean? Different like the way the other guy is different? Or different as in like, I got to be quirky. I got to be myself. But what does that mean? So I think like we have to unpack different.
There has to be a reason that helps you do that. And
okay.
and you see, I'm just sitting here like the cat who ate the cheese and sat out the mouse outside of the mouse hole, you know, with bated breath. That's an old joke. But because what happens is where do you get new ideas? See, when companies get together all the time, and this is where Steve made the big bucks, was when Steve learned how to do this. And I learned how to do this through some very smart, very, very smart people. I don't know if you know who W. Edward Deming is. Okay, he's the father of total quality management. He's the guy who made Toyota famous. He's the guy who made Toyota rich. Okay, he was a consultant in the United States who created a total quality management, and he's the one who did it. I mean, he if you look him up, W. Edward Deming, very famous. Well, when my dad and his partner were building the 8-track tape player, they ultimately decided to build it in Japan. This is back in the 1960s.
Okay,
made in Japan back in the 1960s. Was crap. It was terrible. I mean, they were known for the little umbrellas that opened up and closed that you would put in your drinks, your Mai Tai, mm-hmm. stuff like that. That's what they were known for, right? But they were still rebuilding from World War II. And this guy, Edwards Deming, was hired by Toyota to come in and teach him how to build quality. Build quality in. Okay. And my dad saw this was really smart. And he said, we need to have quality in our 8-tracks as well. So he and his partner, Bill Lear, hired Deming to come in and work with them. I'm a young teenager. And my dad thought it would be very interesting to drag me along on trips with these three old white guys. And that I might learn something from them. Well, I had no interest whatsoever to be around these guys, right? But he dragged me there, and then, God forbid, I would have learned anything. And it took, and many, many years later, I finally learned it. I finally learned what Deming taught me. One of the cornerstones of the total quality philosophy. One of the cornerstones was a word he coined is called benchmarking.
Okay.
And benchmarking, the definition of benchmarking is to observe correct behavior and then emulate within your own context. Deming also explained that there are two types of benchmarking. One he called it intrinsic, and one was extrinsic. In other words, internal and external, right? Now, so what do we got going on? What did we just talk about with the box? We talked about the box that everybody's in. Everything that's happening inside that box is internal. It's intrinsic benchmark. We're benchmarking. That's what we're doing. We're watching the competition. We're watching all the competitors in our box, and that is intrinsic benchmarking. Benchmarking. Easy for me to say. I am a professional speaker, and so you watch that, and you learn from watching each other. Now, what does that teach you? Nothing. It teaches you what makes you all equal. Uh-huh. All right. It that's all it does. It shows what you need, the minimum viable product, the MVP, the minimum viable product of what you have to do to be equal to the competition. But it does not teach you innovation. It does not mm-hmm. teach you what else you can do outside. And so Deming said extrinsic is when you have to leave your box. This is where they say get out of the box. But what you do is you go into other boxes. You go climb in and invade other boxes that you are completely unrelated to. So if you are in the car, automotive manufacturing box, all right, and you want to learn and you want to come up with some new ideas, then you go climb into some box over here. Now, I'll give you an example. What I'm talking about is that I was consulting for Caterpillar for their mm-hmm. big stuff, you know, dirt movers and excavators. And I mean, just big, really cool toys, guys' toys, right? and I'm consulting for these guys, and they want to come up with some new ideas for how do they market? How do they teach their customers? How do they work with people in ways that are different from everybody else, right? And I said, okay, cool. So their offices were outside of Chicago. We got a bus, and I drove the executive team to downtown Chicago to this store. It was the only store in the world at the time. Now it's all over the U.S. And it was called the American Girl Store.
I love where you're going. You could not pick two further ends of spectrum.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
great example.
So I was taking them into a box that they couldn't possibly have ever thought of.
Yeah.
All right. I had to pull them kicking and screaming out of the bus into the store. And I said to them, I want you to go into that store, and all I want you to do is I want you to study how they take care of their customers. What do they do to interact with their customers, and how do they take their money? And the customers are happy to give them their money. Okay. 2 hours later, I had to drag them kicking and screaming out of the store.
Amazing.
Because it was such an amazing learning experience for them. To go in to a doll store. Now, you being a mom of two boys, you mm-hmm. didn't have to go through this. Girl dad, when my daughter was 10 years old, I said, hey, sweetie, what would you like to do for your 10th birthday? And she says, I want to fly to Chicago and go to the American Girl Store.
Wow.
Dad had points. Dad had miles. All right. So it's like, okay. So we went there and we spent, well, I laugh about it, but I think my wife will tell you it was true. I think we spent 4 hours in that store.
Yeah.
And you go in there and the store is, they've got, they've got a beauty salon for the dolls. You know, they've got, matching clothes that you can buy for the girls. They have a restaurant in the store that, of course, you're going to buy the doll food while you're in there, right? It's all to go. Hello. And, they got high chairs for them and stuff like that. They teach the girls etiquette in the restaurant while they're eating and stuff like that. The girls are learning. They have a bookstore with historically based books about the dolls. Okay. So, and if the doll, I hesitate to say, if a doll breaks, okay, an American Girl doll does not break.
Okay.
It gets sick.
So smart. So smart.
So instead of a customer service, customer repair, it's a hospital. And the doll is checked into the hospital. And when you check the doll into the hospital, they come out with a little wheelchair and they take the doll back into the hospital to take care of the doll.
I have to ask you, what was their biggest takeaway that you saw them implement and execute to make themselves different?
They asked them, see what they did, which good for them, you know, of course I helped, you know, a little bit, but good for them. The thing that they did was they went back and they looked at all the interactions that they would have with drivers, people who learned how to use their equipment and stuff like that. And they translated it back to the American Girl. And they said, what would American Girl do with these people? All right. How would they change it? How would they change the way they were learning how to drive these things? How would they change the, okay. Another thing was, I want you to think about this. American Girl store. Who does not want to be in an American Girl store?
I would assume a dad.
And or grandpa. Dad, yeah. Dad, brothers, and grandpa.
Yeah.
they have sofas all over the store.
Comfortable, I would imagine, too.
Filled with dads and brothers and grandpas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so see, these guys started asking themselves questions, not just about American Girl, but like, for example, one of the guys came up with the concept, well, what if we took an airline club, American Airlines Club, Delta Airlines Club, one of those clubs, okay, what if we took that concept and we melded it in with the Caterpillar education, training institute or wherever they called it, so that when they came, they weren't just sitting around on, you know, terrible chairs waiting to go in and stuff like that. They would actually come in and they had these wonderful
lounges.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's stuff like that, right? That they took away. And books, you know, that the American Girl. So then Caterpillar turned some of their books. They actually turned some of their books into kids' books, right? About, oh, what if you were a kid and you got to run one of these, you know, some of this equipment and stuff like that. These books. So they were takeaways that dad. Or if mom was one of the drivers, you know, mom could take them back to their kids and stuff. See, this is what I'm talking about with branding. Is that, see, then you are now delivering something that the competition, this is really important to understand this. The competition either can't copy or they won't copy.
Yeah, because it's too almost outside. I feel like
it's too far outside.
And you know, I think when you were first talking about being different, and this is what I see time and time again with brands, they say that they want to be different, but it makes them too uncomfortable so that they don't. I love that you've broken down what different looks like. And I especially love the example that you provided, because you were right. There are so many things that you can take away from different environments that you're like, ah, that's how I can apply it. It's one of the things that I also absolutely love doing from like a design perspective. If I get really stuck from a creative perspective, there is something about, talk about traveling. I love to walk the terminals because there are so many different flashy ways that they're trying to get your attention. And I just finished traveling this past week, but I clocked it in myself and I'm like, oh, I should really just be taking pictures of all of these things.
Yes, you should.
Need it right now, but like, I really liked the way the font looked here. I have no idea where I would apply it, but I really liked it here. Okay. You know?
Yeah. See, that's exactly what we teach. You know, we have, you know about my two books, my first book, Uncopyable, which is sitting right there. That was a bestseller. The book that we got right now, Uncopyable You, which is the personal branding book. Okay. But if you look back here, you'll also see one that's called Stealing Genius. That's mm-hmm. what we call it. That you expose yourself to foreign alien experiences and then you steal genius. Remember, let me give you an example from American Girl. It's a hospital. It's not customer service. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's another company, fairly famous, that also does something similar to that. This company, I don't know if you've heard of them, it's a store called Apple. And if you go to the Apple store, okay, there's really only one, if I'm correct about this, they have pictures all over the walls. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There's on the walls, there's no copy. All right. Except for two words on the back wall. Do you know what those two words are?
I don't. Luckily, I don't go to an Apple store.
Okay. Luckily, you don't. Okay. And the two words are Genius Bar. And they have people walking around in t-shirts their t-shirts are different colors than the other employees. And they have a little badge and it says Genius. Okay. And they are there to, let's see, what's the phrase they call it? Oh, take care of customers. Customer service. They call it the Genius Bar. Okay. And anybody who is a Mac Apple aficionado, they know.
Yeah.
The Genius Bar, everybody knows where the Genius, that there's a Genius Bar in every, and that's where you go. It's just customer service. It's the hospital, from American Girl.
It's where you triage everything. I love the idea of different. I love the idea that different also builds on brand loyalty. You've done such an amazing job at just dropping all of these knowledge bumps. Oh, do you have one more thing that you want to say?
I'm giving you examples, okay? Because everything that you see in my picture walks the talk. First of all, you're pointing
to your moose picture?
Yeah, moose.
The moose?
Yeah, the moose. See, we don't teach people to have an avatar. We don't teach people to go out and have a persona, design a persona, or what's your target market or something like that. We teach people you are hunting moose in the forest. If you decide that moose are your top prospect, mm-hmm. That's who your ideal customer is a moose, right? Do you go hunting moose in Florida? No.
No.
No, you'd be an idiot to go to Florida, right? you got to go where? Like to Canada or something like that. And you got to go find forests that are filled with moose in Canada. Okay? So that's step one. But step two is that you get out there and you know what? In those forests, there's a lot of other animals in that forest. And they can be very distracting. You know, and if you're a dumb butt, then you might go and start hunting beaver. You might have this gun, and you're hunting beaver and deer and fish, you know, stuff like that. But the fact is, no, you're not. You're hunting moose. This is one of the number one things that we when we're working with people is we say, okay, it all starts with the moose. Everything starts with the moose. If you know your moose better than anybody else, and you learn what makes them hungry,
yeah,
and you learn how to communicate, how to feed them, how to communicate with them, in ways that are complete. You've got moose bait. You got a moose gun. You got nobody else has this stuff. You do. All right. The moose come looking for you. The moose come looking for you. And that's the, and over the many years that we've been, that Kay and I have been doing this now, crazy enough, this is the one thing our clients will tell you over and over again, who's your moose? That's the number one thing they walk away with. Who's your moose?
No. I love this. I can't thank you enough for coming on here and like sharing your insights. I do have one final question for you. And I almost feel like it's a loaded question because I feel like you could probably go on for days for if you knew then what you know now, what's the advice that you give to yourself? But what would be the key advice that you give to yourself if you know then what you know now?
I look back, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have gone to college.
Really? Ooh, that's a hot take. Why is that?
Because I was a learner.
Mm-hmm.
See, I knew I was always a learner. I was a reader. And I will add one other thing that kind of affects the conversation. Okay, I was a really, really good golfer.
Really.
And I almost made it on the PGA golf tour. I actually got on the tour for a couple of years. Now, why do I say that that's important? Because really good golfers attract everybody who loves golf.
Mm-hmm.
And I have met so many rich and famous people through golf. I became a Tedster because of golf. See that little Ted doll there? That guy there? I'm a Tedster. In other words, I attend Ted. The Ted.
That really?
Yes. I was one of the first people to do a video talk on the stage at Ted. I'm standing there talking. I'm talking to Ted. Cameron Diaz is as close to me as you are. All right. And every other famous, very, very rich person on the planet. Okay. And so, but because I was a golfer, Chris Anderson, the guy who owns Ted, invited me to come in and start attending Ted. See, so I had these connections, but you see, I'm a learner. So I take advantage of the connections that I've got to learn, not always to go out and make money or stuff like that. Most of my connections are to learn from, and I have been so blessed to have made connections with unbelievably smart people in the world. I didn't need to go to college for it. I didn't need to. And, you know, I was a terrible student. I ended up majoring in electives. So, that's the way I was. Tell people, look, there's a place for college, but I think college is overrated.
And that's going to be the soundbite.
That's the sound button.
Thank you again so much, Steve. This has been an absolute joy. Thank you.
Are you sure? Are you happy?
I am happy. I am giving you a grade A.
You are. I see that. That makes me very, very happy. You just made my year.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I hope to see you again.
Did I tell you that there were going to be knowledge bombs? There were knowledge bombs. I'm ready to dive into my three key takeaways from this episode. Key takeaway number one, inspiration, not perspiration. Now, don't burn calories and sweat what the competitors are doing. The key is to be different. That's what the entire podcast was about, right? So don't look at your competitors to do what they're doing. Too many times we spend energy obsessing over what our competition is doing. And honestly, oftentimes that direction comes from others in our organization. Sometimes executive leadership, sometimes, you know, just people that are owning products. It doesn't matter. It comes from different places. So it may not just always be from a marketing perspective. I mean, if I had a penny for every time someone brought up a competitor's website, for instance, We'll put a pin on that one. I digress. I think that it's natural to want to check out what they're doing, and we should stay informed. So I'm not saying don't ever look at it. We have to be cognizant, though, of the risk of playing by their rules and not yours in creating, and that creates just a mismatch in messaging and a misrepresentation of your brand if you're not cognizant of it, right? So you can definitely check them out to be inspired of what you may need to work on, but don't use it as a blueprint. It's not as strategic as it may seem on the surface. That would be the equivalent, or copying them would be just kind of the equivalent of trying to win a race by running in someone else's shoes. It's uncomfortable, unnatural, and it doesn't really get you ahead. It doesn't make you faster. Am I right? Okay. Key takeaway number two, step out of your box, but hop into another. Similar sort of to the first key takeaway, but this is actually diving into what we mean by truly being kind of innovative. Now, competitors won't try and copy if you're innovative because it makes them uncomfortable. You always have to be a little uncomfortable to be just sort of testing those boundaries, right? In marketing specifically. I'm not out here to get canceled for saying something like that. But you do. You have to be a little risky in what you're doing from a marketing perspective to truly be innovative. Something that Steve said that really resonated was stepping out of this box. We all know that adage. We have to think outside of the box. But he takes it a step further. Don't just step out of it, step into another box. Creativity is a muscle. It needs to grow. So give it a protein shake and start doing deadlifts with it. Look outside of your usual reference points to get the inspiration to remain innovative with your campaigns. In the episode, he used the John Deere and American Doll example. Obsessed with that. I loved it. It couldn't be more different, right? Both of those brands. And if that story didn't inspire you enough, let's reframe it a little bit. Once in a new box, ask yourself, what are they solving for? Who are they reaching? Why did they choose this? Identify what you like first, and then give yourself time to breathe. That may sound silly, but trust me. There is nothing worse than trying to be creative in the moment. It just doesn't happen. If it was a switch, if it was that easy, everybody would do it. I always like to say, I don't know what I'm going to do and I don't know what I'm going to say, but I know I won't be able to come up with it when you're staring at me. And my final key takeaway is hunt for the moose in the forest. Now, Steve really doubled down on this moose analogy, which honestly I think is to remove the regular kind of vocabulary that us marketers get bogged down with, right? Ideal customer, buyer personas. The moose is basically who you want to sell to and knowing how to get your message across. Everyone has a currency, and that includes those you're marketing to. So find their currency and pay the exchange rate. I actually think about my kids when it comes to this. When they were little, of course, I raised my voice, so I'm not even pretend like I didn't yell. I did. I'm human. But that didn't ever really get them to listen or hear what I was trying to say. But as you may have guessed, I have raised chatty people. So when they were younger, they were even, well, I shouldn't say they were even chattier. My point is they're chatty people. So you know what their currency was and still is? Communication. To get them to listen, I had to be silent. The silence got their attention. I removed what they wanted and they stopped to listen to the message. Don't worry, I'm not going from marketing to parenting expert. I am just saying, know your audience, speak their language, and learn what they like. This will help you create a strategy and a message that hits the nail on the head, or one that, in Steve's terms, finds the moose in the forest. Now, what did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. A special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike, and thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.